96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I will not let you down. We will do a great show. We will do a great show. I look very much forward to being your president.
2016 is coming to an end, and it seems to have no end of surprises, from politics to social upheaval to those we lost. 2016 was an incredible year, and tonight at the Reporters Roundtable, we will talk about some of the top news stories of 2016. My guests are Denise Rolock Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and Keith Alexander, reporter with the Washington Post. And we're going to ask you, what stories impacted you the most in 2016 and why? Lines are open. Join the conversation at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Comment on my Facebook page at facebook.com/HaroldFisherWHUR, Twitter at DailyDrumWHUR, or at HFisherWHUR. Denise and Keith, thank you all so much. Happy New Year. Thanks for coming in.
Happy New Year. Thank you, sir.
Okay,
you.
Let's talk about the obvious one, but the thing that is not so obvious in your opinions. Obviously, a big surprise that Donald Trump won the 2016 presidential election. He is president-elect. That's the big surprise. But Denise, I'll start with you. What is the thing that you have found most unusual in the past 2 months or so?
If we're talking about the big surprise, it's the fact that there were so many who are still surprised by this election. And it doesn't matter whether they're black or female or male or white or Asian or any other ethnic group. I mean, no matter where I go in the city, and I just happened to have been out of the country on the date of the election, one of those early voters who left the country tried to decide whether I was coming back. But the whole world was still, is still, I think, shocked by the turnout. And in while some may be cautiously optimistic, there are still lots of people who are very have very negative opinions about the president-elect and what the expectations will be in 2017.
Same question for you, Keith.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big surprise is that Trump won. But since his victory, what has surprised you the most about this?
A couple of things. One, how the media got it wrong. You know, the media really made us think that this was a sure thing for Hillary Clinton. And the media just did not have a good grasp of the Wisconsin, of central Pennsylvania, of states that people really seem to not really care about, unless you're on the East Coast or the West Coast. The states in the middle, people, the media just, for some reason, just did not have a handle on what was going on with them. And those are the ones who helped really put Trump over. That's one thing that really surprised me. And that even came through even in election night. But also what's been happening since the election, just recently, with Obama saying, I would have won if I had run a third time. Why would you say that? You know, you're trying to ease this transition, and we know how Trump responds to things, which is what he's done on Twitter, responding that he's going to take things personally. And this transition has to be seamless so that the country can move forward. And by saying things like that, it just makes me a little – I was surprised that he would make that type of a statement, knowing – how President-elect Trump would respond.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about seamless, because just today, the president-elect has tweeted that this has not been a seamless process. And there
he's
are
referring to what Obama said.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there was a report from the Post today that the president did call the president-elect. We don't know what was said in reference to that. But I just find that whole process really, really, really strange, because historically, unless there are things that we just don't know that have not been revealed, that from from Bush to Obama, from one could even argue from Nixon to Ford, that the process was seamless. And yet, you know, the tension between the current president and the president-elect is palatable. What does that portend for 2017 and beyond?
Well, first of all, I think I have to go back to the point of what Keith said earlier about the media not getting it wrong and how we're...
You mean not getting it right.
Not getting it right. Sometimes they get it wrong. But, you know, there's always selective reporting. And we know that initially in the early stages, the president, both the president and the president-elect, talked about a very gracious conversation that they had about what this transition is going to be like. So, I mean, the interesting thing to me was that neither one of them had ever had a conversation before. And so it seemed to me at this point that they would be having conversations now. And like you said, maybe we're not talking. We don't know about them. But I think that there are times when presidents, and maybe that happened with President Obama, where the outgoing administration does make it difficult. I mean, we've talked about how offices have been trashed and things have been left in disarray, and the incoming folks have to really start, not necessarily from scratch, but clean up before they can gear up to start running the country. So I don't know how unusual this is, and I'm going to assume that it's the tension between the parties, the candidates, and their supporters is a big news item. And so that's what, you know, folks are going to report.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of 2016, from politics to social issues to those we've lost. Obviously, the other side of this political issue is Hillary Clinton. As maybe some people have expected her not to completely vanish, and we have seen glimpses of her, and I don't mean walking through the woods, but I mean she's made appearances and the like. But, you know, the email scandal, the discussions even that tomorrow there could be discussions about sanctions against the Russians because of email hacking. Your thoughts about all of that, Keith? I mean, I really think that that story still has a lot of legs.
You know, I do think it has a lot of, like, I think there are people and there are reporters out there who are looking more into this, particularly what is Trump going to do once he gets in office? I mean, he seems to be going back and forth as to his plans on whether or not he's going to investigate, file charges. Where is this going to go with the whole emails? I don't think we've heard the last of it. I really think that this is going to be something that is going to follow her for a year, if not two more years. This is going to be something that the Department of Justice, whoever the Attorney General is, and in terms of what he decides what he wants to do, this is not going to go away anytime soon.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Nicole, calling from D.C. Nicole, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so it wasn't a lot of conversation about, but there were actually two officers convictions in 2016, one being Daniel Holzkau in Oklahoma City, who had raped several women while on duty, and the other one was Officer Bates in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who shot Eric Harris, the one that had made the news for saying F your breath as he was dying. So it didn't make, like I said, you heard more about the shootings that went on, but you never really heard about any of the convictions that have occurred. And it just felt really good because finally some of these officers are finally being held accountable for their actions and the FOP is not standing behind them.
You know, Nicole, it's interesting you should mention that because the officer who was convicted of those rapes, and I remember that story vividly, and we did some reporting on it, that one of the things that was interesting is that all of the women were from underserved communities. Mm-hmm. They were, considered the underclass, the poor, and that as a police officer, it was said in court that he was able to take advantage of them because nobody cared. And the fact that they came forward and they testified, and I do remember that case, you know, quite vividly. But again, I think it's interesting that it goes back to the point of even in this day of internet and high tech, that the big news operations are on the coasts. They're not in the center of the country. And unless something really, really big happens, as we've seen, you know, with, you know, Philando Castile in the Black Lives Matter situation, or some of the other cases that have happened in Texas and everywhere else, that they don't get the kind of coverage or attention unless people are marching in the streets.
Well, I think one of the things that those of us in the media know and have experienced is that this is a business. And just like the economy has taken a hit, media has not been unaffected by economics. And so media organizations, and as an owner of a newspaper, I recognize that media organizations don't have the resources to cover all of those stories just like they used to. So, yeah, when you talk about the coasts, where the big news happens. I mean, you're talking about Hollywood, too, mm-hmm. and Wall Street and different areas that help to fuel the economic wheels of media. There's not much in the center of the country that helps media to continue to survive. And so they are really dependent on things like social media to see how are these stories trending, what's bubbling up that we may need to put some resources behind to send a reporter out there, to send a crew out there. I mean, and I've heard reporters say this to me, Denise, it's we as a nation, I think, are being negatively impacted by, when I say the lack of resources, how that's affecting media and its ability to cover stories the way we think it should be with all of these resources right now.
I'm going to disagree just a little bit because, you know, last year, you know, I'm not tooting our horn, but we did win a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
But for focusing on these fatal police shootings.
Who owns you?
Well, right. Keith, but we, well, Jeff, let's go to the point. Right.
Amazon, Bezos, you all got resources.
That's true. But we're also turning a profit this year, you know, and which is kind of amazing in this, as you mentioned, amazing in this business.
Right.
But we don't depend on social media. We looked at how we found those cases last year is when someone was killed. We dove into that, those shootings. Was the person armed? Has the officer killed multiple times? And based on what we see as reporters, we can say, you know what? This is really odd here. This police officer has killed six times, mm-hmm. and here's another killing. We should go to that town. So I think, you know, I realize the Washington Post is not like a lot of news organizations. I realize that.
Right,
but
right.
We're also not depending on social media to tell us what is news. Mm. We're also jumping in, and we can, as reporters, we help to have to do it ourselves. I mean, that's what we do.
Nicole, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about some of the top stories of 2016 at the Reporters Roundtable. Let's go to Mike. Mike, quickly, what's on your mind?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, and lady, but go right ahead. Yeah.
Hey, Mike.
I appreciate y'all having this discussion, but what bothers me, this police shooting in Washington, D.C. on Christmas. The family say that the police say one thing, and the family say another thing. I witnessed this about 5 years ago with Clyde Jackson, the same thing with the police shooting. He did not have a good knife, but they shot him, and they got away with it, and they're doing the same thing. This is not just the first one killing like this, and with the cops saying that somebody had a knife. It's their word against the public, and nobody's doing nothing about this. Even all the marches that we're doing, the cops are still killing our youth. What can we do as a nation to stop this? Because sooner or later, these young ones will start killing these police.
Well, Mike, you know, you bring up an interesting point, and you're talking about Gerald Javon Hall, but that could also be put in that same category as Terrence Sterling.
That's right.
Who was shot and killed by a D.C. police officer on September 11th of this year. Mm-hmm. And then, as I mentioned, we have the Philando Castile situation in Minnesota, and we have the Terrence Crutcher situation even in Oklahoma. So on and on and on. This is another Black Lives Matter issue. And so if you lump it all, is it safe to say, and we can talk about this on the other side, and here's my question, is it safe to say that the Black Lives Matter movement and the situations have grown, have changed, have gone through a bit of a metamorphosis? I want you to think about that as we talk about some of the other top stories of 2016. If you were on the phone, that includes LaJuan calling from D.C. and John also calling from D.C. Stay on the line. You will be able to hear the program and we will be able to take your calls. We are talking about the top stories of 2016, and we're still taking calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in